You're listening to Post Perspectives Meet the Artist podcast, sponsored by Puget Systems.
Hi, this is Randy Altman from Post Perspective, and welcome to the latest edition of our Meet the Artist podcast. For this episode, writer Ian Blair spoke to Linus Sandgren, the director of photography on Saltburn. Here he talks about working with director Emerald Fennell and more. Enjoy.
What was the appeal of doing this?
Well, there was two. One was basically that the script was brilliant. I thought it was very suspenseful and exciting. I was drawn in by the build-up of the script, how she sort of had it constructed. So I couldn't stop reading, actually. I read it straight through. But I thought it was a very exciting for me because I haven't really done this type of film before. You know, it's a very unique story and a very unique approach to how this sort of psychopathic character, also how you felt affection for him, the sort of sympathy you kind of could feel for him in a way, but still being so so dark and funny. So it was a very unique script, really, and also I was excited to first talk to Emerald because of her work on Promising Young Woman, which I loved. And I thought she showed like excellent directing sort of abilities on that one, where she was doing very bold decisions. And then we had a call, and I was just very sort of seduced by her. you know, always when you meet directors in the beginning, it's like how they present their project. And she's just so brilliant when she explains her vision, you know, and you're really drawn into her storytelling, I think.
Tell us a bit about how you collaborated on finding the right look.
Yeah, so I always have this approach where I try to, I don't normally like to try to find the look just, you know, thinking of different films or whatever. It's more like I'd like it to be more abstract, and a good approach for that is to talk about words, and just like words that comes to the director when I ask her, like, if you just say words, what would words be that would be sort of important for the film? And she would say things like, you know, desire, or like unachievable desire or something like this. And she said, the beautiful and the ugly, you know, at the same time, right? Beauty and ugliness. It could be like love and hate, or lick each other dry, or wet. She said words like this, right? Yeah. So suddenly you get images in your head. And one was also vampire. So something with the story that is both that the family itself is sort of the ancestors and through hundreds of years, that kind of family is like vampires. But also Oliver obviously is like a vampire who kind of loves them so much he just wants to creep inside their skin and become them and kill them. And you know, it's like, so there's some sort of metaphorical, I love that. When we came sort of in the beginning of talking about all this, I was attracted to, because she had already, you know, like she had a lot of vision already in terms of like actually visual references. And just by sort of, I guess not coincidence, but like somehow she had already thought of in this world, but she had a lot of like, she had images from Hitchcock movies about like voyeurism and like looks through gaps in doorways, and also like silent horror movies and paintings, like, and usually like Caravaggio type paintings. So in all that, when we started discussing, we kind of grounded it, I think, in some sort of gothic vampiristic core. But then the story couldn't just start like that, right? We had to fool the audience sort of into it a little bit, or like not sort of explain that right away, but have imagery that could be in the vein of that, or like be related to that, so it wasn't too far away. So there's so much right in prep when you talk about these things where things just come together, but it became some sort of idea of sort of like Baroque art, as in like Caravaggio and these kind of paintings that are dramatic, maybe Romanticism as well in a way, and Impressionism in a way, but more like those more expressive type of lightings, and where the subject in the image could be gross while it's kind of beautiful to watch. That sort of idea of where you mix ugly and beauty, and at the same time that would be sort of where we're heading, right, to that. And the ultimate peak of that would be those knights at the castle, or like at this manor, where the knights would be the more dramatic, gothic, vampire-esque, which all also had to do with sort of filling the scenes with sort of sensuality, and there's sort of erotic undertones even in normal dialogue scenes, where that was sort of also important to keep as a thread throughout. And so then it became that the language was going to be basically that the days could be sort of sunny and bright and romantic and sort of sexy, while the nights would be more dangerous and sort of dark and sexy. So they were sort of related, but it was almost like as if outside the castle at daytime, it would be just romantic and beautiful, but hopefully you feel sort of that once you get inside, you get a dooming feeling of something is wrong or something is foreboding or dark by having darker interior days. And as well, then the nights would be more the sort of vampire-esque nights. So it was kind of these discussions we had early on, and which led us to the lighting style inspired by these things, and also the compositions, really. Like I think there's something with this. I mean, Emerald also had this important point, which was that she'd like it to feel like this whole sort of house was like a dollhouse, and we could peek into it and watch it through sort of like peeking in like this. And then she felt that had a squarer format. But it all made sense to me too, with that in mind, as well as the voyeuristic sort of approach, where when you look at something, you focus on one singular thing more than if you go scope, it feels like then you see much more. So that, as well as the compositions that we could do then in a little more painterly style, as soon as we started sort of shooting in that, we knew we were right with the sort of aspect ratio, because we felt that we could do more expressive, I think, compositions that could be a little bit like as if you're just watching basically a sort of an oil painting kind of thing, and that type of composition, classic, and let it live in it and sort of block the scenes within a frame like that without really, cutting, or you go in really tight on something. But it was sort of that, like, play with it a little bit also, I guess, slightly artful more than cinematic, if you will, I guess, somehow. It would be less where you tell the story in a, you think less about the natural natural sort of shot list that in other films, I feel like we would have thought of the shot list in another way. Here it would be more like, how can we tell this story in a single shot? And do we need another shot? And what is that? And then probably that's just a close-up, like really tight close-up. So we had sort of a slightly different way of blocking the scenes, I think, as well, compared to what I've done before. It's all about that, I think, creating that language. And the more you nail it in before you get in and shoot it, then sort of things solves itself while you start working on each scene.
You're listening to Post Perspectives Meet the Artist podcast, sponsored by Puget Systems.
So just briefly, what camera setup did you use in the end and lenses?
It's 35 millimeter. We shot like super 35 film in a 1:3:3 aspect ratio, which is the silent aspect ratio, right, on the 35 cameras. So same as silent movies, basically, for perf.
Yeah. So what camera did you use?
It was a Panaflex XL2.
Yeah.
Generally, we had a 435 as well, but okay. It was mainly the XL2 Panavisions. Yeah.
Okay. If you could send that through Deanna, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah.
So did you work with your colorist in prep? Is it Matt? You usually work with Matt?
Right. So Matt Wallach, I have worked with on many movies for dailies and lately in the DI. And he's based in Los Angeles at Company 3, but and used to be E-Film, right? And then we did set this up together. But then because he couldn't come over for London to do the dailies, he was involved sort of remotely to watch stills from the dailies. Because my workflow is always that the film goes and gets scanned, in this case at Cine Labs in London, developed and scanned with a Scanity scanner, 4K. So final scan from the beginning, and then we don't touch the negative again. And then it goes to Company 3 for dailies, but before the dailies are distributed, the colorist sends me stills from his, I forget what it's called, his grading suite in dailies. It's not Da Vinci, it's like a sort of a simpler thing that is made for just dailies where they can do all the, you know, audio and stuff as well. He sends me so I can look at the color, just a few stills from the different scenes. And usually in the beginning, it takes sort of a week or two and we dial it in where, you know, I may tell him, either I don't say anything. He gets the footage. He uses his instinct and we apply a Kodak print emulation LUT. And then to that, he's sort of like first working with the printer lights to see where he has the footage. And then he would do what he feels is right with perhaps contrast or lower blacks. And then he would just tell me what he did. And we look at it on the stills. So he sends me stills. And then I could be like, oh, go a little colder or darker or bright, whatever. But usually after a few days or so, when we kind of dial it in and get the look down. But we spend a little more time in the beginning to sort of make sure we have it right, because it also has to do with me knowing that we're doing the right thing with the lighting. Perhaps I need to add more light next time I do next scene. You know, it could be things I learn for how to proceed during the shoot with the process. But really, like, that's been our way to work since I think what was the first thing I did with Matt was like Joy, or I think Joy was the first thing we worked on together as dailies. And that process is really good because I know the color, you know, nowadays as well, the iPad is like P3 color space, and it just looks really right when you have it at a certain exposure. And right enough to know, but that becomes our look, you know. So that's why it's so important to set that in the dailies, because once we're in the DI, I don't want to change it. I just want to adjust things like match the shots to each other or fix a face or do something, but not change the sort of look, right? The look should be there. And that's what I like with film too, that it gives you an inherent sort of it adds something to it. I usually say that I feel like I know exactly how it's going to look, but it looks just like 5% better or different or better with the film, because it gives me things that I just that pleasures me when I see it. It's like, oh, look at the halation there, or look at those blue shadow, you know, there's something always going on that it's hard to actually imagine because you don't see it with your eyes, even if you know it's going to be there. And so that's nice. And then basically, if you look at the dailies on any of those films, it's like how the films look, you know, like any of my previous films. And I don't want to touch it much. So that's why I felt like it was better to have the same colors do the dailies as the DI. But in this case, actually, Deutschin, I can find you his last name. He did Nutcracker and Four Realms with me, and he was great for this because he's also got a great eye for darkness, and he's not afraid of like letting it be dark. You know, he doesn't like automatically go like, oh shit, we have to brighten this up. So and I had it already experienced. We worked together before, so the three of us sort of dialed it in together initially, and then he just sent stills to me and Matt, and we just looked at it. But that way, also Matt was very familiar with the footage when we came to the DI.
Right.
So I know it's different. I mean, it's different for colorists, like to spend time. But it's been really good to. It's like it used to be with a timer that they kind of kept a track on the whole project. So. He also did Matt also did the trailers, you know, these things. So all right. That is solid, in sort of a solid control.
Give us a few quick nuts and bolts. How long was the shoot, roughly?
Oh, I think it was 47, maybe 6, 46, okay. 47, I think.
Yeah. And the all done in that one house, right? The country house.
Yeah, I mean, it's done well. It's done in the country house and in a nearby country house for some exteriors, right. Like the bridge, that little bridge where they throw the stones. That is at another property, and then otherwise all the interiors are at the house, and then Oxford is in Oxford, all of it, except some interiors of Oxford is closer to London, in a building closer to London, just some dorms and stuff. And then London is London for the cafe,
And I think you told me at the party, there's only one set, the bathroom, right, that you built?
Right. The bathroom was built inside of a room, the two rooms next to it were Oliver's and Felix's room. They were completely painted and dressed and made up as their room. So they didn't look that way at all when we came in. So basically she built actually four rooms in a row. It's Oliver's room. It's the red corridor. That was important. It was a red corridor going into the bathroom, and then the bathroom, and then then Felix's room. Those sort of four rooms were built and sort of painted and dressed and so on. So, but they let us paint the windows, the, you know, all that woodwork that was there was white, and we painted it, I think, was it black or dark gray or something like this. So they let us alter it. And I think those rooms are actually kept, I think, in that way. I'm not sure, but I think so. And then what else was built? The whole maze is a visual effects combined with practical. When we're down there walking around, it's all practical. And it's sort of like we had these hedge walls that were moved around so we could get through. And the center of the hedge of the whole maze was built by Susie Davis, the production designer, and her team, with that big statue in the middle and all. But for the big wide exterior top shot and the wide shot from the window that he looks out, that's all VFX through these sort of windows, yeah.
What was the most difficult scene to shoot for you, and why?
Wow, that's a good question that I should have thought of. I mean, I think the scenes that are his party, Oliver's party was throughout the film, you know, like we had to be delicate with also the property because it was a sensitive property, as much as they were very, very accommodating, super, really, really nice people, helped us all the time. They had staff helping us all the time. But of course, it was a sensitive property, so we couldn't drive around too many condors and or cherry pickers, or if you will. But so the night party, though, Oliver's party at the end, those scenes that are all around that night, they're kind of shot at the same, it's like two or three nights, but it's all sort of shot from one end of the house to another end of the garden. Same, you know, it could be in the same day, we would be inside of the maze and outside at the discotheque, or inside at the, you know, the red staircase. And all of that had to sort of be pre-lit to work 360, basically. And it was daunting a little bit because I knew we couldn't really just driving condors to light that anywhere. So we had to, we could eventually sort of position lighter condors and sneak them in from other angles. So it was just a little complicated to plan it out. Plus, thanks to the really, really good special effects department that could fog it all up, we could sort of catch, even with not so big light sources, catch nightlight, moonlight sort of thing. And then we had we sprinkled out a lot. It was a lot of cabling to do for the electric department, and to cable out and have sort of these maxi brutes and other light sources for flicker effect of augmenting firelights. And Susie Davis helped with fire flames so that we could, and practical lights in there so we could like make it all look like a big party, because it also had to be like so we could go into that maze, and then in the maze it was other light sources to sort of create moonlight. So it was just a big scene to be this for this film, I think, that required a lot of planning and pre-lighting. But I mean, it wasn't super hard, but it was probably challenging. Then maybe there was something else that was more challenging for another reason. I mean, it's always challenging when you do scenes that are like emotional or tricky that way. But I feel like for this film, both Barry, he was so easy to approach. He was so approachable as an actor. He's like as a person, and he was very sort of kind of, to at least from what I felt like, very open and daring. Like he could easily be, you know, act vulnerable and do things that are sensitive without you know, it wasn't, he was very easy to work with that way. It was never any issues with these kind of things, so that was kind of actually easy. No, most of it was just a great joy, I must say. It was really, really fun shoot. We had lots of fun, laughed every day, I think.
Thank you for listening to Post Perspectives Meet the Artist podcast, sponsored by Puget Systems. For more information, please visit PugetSystems.com.